Hello and welcome to another Texans Talk podcast. I'm your host for the week, Anthony Wood, and with me today is the wonderful Damon Amendolara from CBS. Damon, thank you very much for joining me. How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you very much for joining us. We've been looking forward to hearing from you. So first of all, what is your verdict on the Texans draft and their free agency so far?
Well, I think it's kind of high risk, high reward in some ways. For the draft, I know that the Texans want to value building through the draft, and so they needed to help out that offensive line in front of Deshaun Watson. They went out and they got Titus Howard. They went out and they drafted Max Sharping, and so they have some options there. But the question is, can those guys perform at the highest level? Because they come from smaller football programs. I mean, Howard's coming from Alabama State. You've got kids coming in from Northern Illinois. These are not exactly NFL powerhouses normally in terms of how they develop talent. So what I mean by high risk, high reward, you're betting on players playing above where they were in college and hoping that they can make that transition quickly because the offensive line of the Texans need it. I think some of the more guaranteed signings that they did in free agency make more sense of counting on right away. A guy like Bradley Roby, I like that signing, and I think that Tayshaun Gibson also gives them a veteran presence as a defensive back as well. So I think right now it's a mixed bag from where I stand and what the Texans have done this offseason.
So do you think they've resolved their main issues, both at corner and offensive tackle, with the free agency and draft combined?
No, I can't say that I think they've resolved them. I think it's a possibility that they've improved. I don't think you can go into 2019 and say, okay, those problems are taken care of. Like I said, on the offensive line, in addition, like Matt Khalil makes sense. He's been around for a long time, but two out of the last 3 years, he's had injury problems. But now you're also putting the eggs in the basket of young players, draft picks. And while they're high-round draft picks, first and second rounders, anytime that you are betting on those young guys coming in and taking over starter spots or playing significant time, especially when you're trying to protect one of the most dynamic young quarterbacks in the league, that's a big risk. And then also from a defensive back standpoint, in this division, you'll have to play two very good quarterbacks four times this year, two against Andrew Luck, assuming they stay healthy, two against Nick Foles, assuming he stays healthy. That's a big challenge, not to mention the rest of their schedule. So I think they took a step forward in improving. I can't say they've solved all the problems.
Absolutely, and you mentioned obviously the problems the Texans have got at cornerback, especially coming up against these very good quarterbacks. Now, here's the big question for me. T.Y. Hilton, Colts wide receiver, has been a big thorn in the Texans' side for quite some time now. Do you think that Roby, given his speed and athleticism, could be the answer they've been looking for in terms of containing him, or do you think perhaps they should look to one of their draft picks?
Well, T.Y. has owned them. You're absolutely right. I mean, and he's comfortable playing against the Texans, and he showed it again in the postseason. And everybody knows that when the Colts are taking on Houston, they're going to target T.Y. Hilton to make big plays. I like Bradley Roby. I think he's an improvement. The problem is depth is always of the utmost importance to the secondary. And we know that the Texans have lost a couple of guys, veteran guys from that secondary in free agency. So is Roby good enough to step in there and totally lock down T.Y. Hilton? Perhaps, but more than that, what about the other side of the defense? Do they have other players at the secondary positions, at defensive back, that can do that? I think Justin Reed is a really important piece of this puzzle. He had a very good rookie season. Does he step up and continue to improve in his second year? That's what the coaching staff hopes for. But can you count on it right now? Well, the Texans are going to have to, because Roby's only one piece of the puzzle in a lot of ways.
Certainly, he certainly is. And I have to admit, a lot of people have criticized the Texans for perhaps reaching for one or two of their picks with Sharping and Howard in particular jumping out. Do you think they reached? Do you think they panicked? Or do you believe these players will pay off in the long run? What's your opinion?
You know, it's so hard to say. I mean, it's not as though you can't get good players from smaller schools, even FCS schools. We saw Carson Wentz come in from an FCS school and almost immediately look very comfortable in the NFL. That can happen. The problem is those situations also have a high bust rate. And you look at a guy's tangibles, and he has the size, he has the speed, maybe he has a great workout or a great combine. and you say, okay, that fits the mold. But does it necessarily translate on Sundays when you have a young guy like Titus Howard, who you just mentioned, playing at Alabama State? Does it translate into rookie season, first year, you can plug him in and he is going to defend against the Jaguars front four? I got a hard time believing that. So I do think their reach is, and it's not that they can't pan out, but you've got a higher bust rate. One of the guys Texans drafted was Lonnie Johnson from Kentucky. Kentucky had a wonderful defense this year, and while they're not normally kind of beasts of the SEC because you have the Alabamas, the LSUs, the Auburns, etc., what you do have there in Kentucky is a very good defense over the last couple of seasons, last year being their best year when they competed for that half of the division, the SEC East. So while I think Howard and Sarpong could be reaches, I think Lonnie Johnson's a really good pick.
Yeah, Lonnie Johnson's a very interesting one because he has all the intangibles you could want, all the measurables you could desire in a cornerback. He's very long, very rangy. So he's an interesting one going into training camp and obviously preseason workouts. So do you think, though, that they perhaps made a mistake by not addressing other needs, perhaps for depth at wide receiver and running back, where they are lacking at the moment?
They really are, and I can't say they made a mistake because I see what they're trying to do. If you are the Texans and you're trying to win right now, which I know that they are, you know, you want to protect Deshaun Watson. We saw what happened when Andrew Luck did not have any offensive line in that division. He just got eaten up. And the Texans, I think, want to avoid throwing a young quarterback like Deshaun Watson out there to the Wolves, knowing that if you protect them, you're going to go a lot farther. So I understand trying to establish that and address that first. And I understand trying to break down, you know, the passing defense, or make sure you help out the passing defense from breaking down by looking at secondary players as well. But I do agree, wide receiver and running back right now could be a problem because you have Will Fuller coming back off of the ACL, and he should be healthy by training camp. But there's no guarantee a guy coming back from an ACL is going to be 100%. And outside of Fuller, there really isn't another good option outside of DeAndre Hopkins, and Hopkins is going to draw a lot of double teams. At running back, you have Lamar Miller, but outside of that, is Devontae Foreman really going to be a guy that you can expect to be the second carrier? And we know that in the NFL, you kind of need a secondary dependable back. So they're very thin to those skill positions, and they absolutely have to address those at some point. But I don't blame the front office for prioritizing offensive line and corner over those two positions.
Yeah, one of the players they drafted is another sort of skill position, tight end Kahale Waring, third round out of San Diego State. He's the one who jumped out this past weekend at rookie minicamp. He's got huge size, great athleticism, great flexibility, but he lacks football experience. He hasn't played for very long. Do you think that was perhaps a risky move, or what do you know of him? What have you seen of him so far?
Yeah, it's a reach. And I always worry about these guys that are really raw football-wise. I think, you know, in the NBA, these stories where you draft a guy and you stash him for a couple of years. Perhaps you stash them in the D-League. Perhaps you stash them across seas in an international league. And you are betting on the stock being there. You can kind of cash in maybe two or three. In the NFL, you don't have that. You just don't have a developmental system where you can stash a guy and have him come up in a couple of years. So young players that are really raw, you're really rolling the dice on. I mean, Texans fans remember Amobi Okoye, where he was really raw. He had not played organized football very long. He was extremely young. I think he was drafted at 20 years old, and that never ended up panning out. So I'm always very leery on guys that don't have a lot of experience playing football. And I think this is one of those guys. Now, look, if it pans out and he ends up being productive, that's a really big weapon and a really important piece of the offense for Deshaun Watson. And then you can really kind of – you can pass off and ignore the fact that they didn't address wide receiver. And if you have Fuller come back and you have DeAndre Hopkins, okay, a wide receiver can be just as important having a second or third wide receiver. But I do think it's a risk considering how little football he has played.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm very intrigued to see what they do with him over the coming weeks, but I am slightly wary of his lack of experience. So What about free agency in terms of who's still available? Who do you think the Texans should be considering, say, for example, Jay Ajayi at running back, or maybe even trading for someone like Chris Harris?
I could see bringing in Jay Ajayi because I know that he had some coaching issues, chemistry issues at Miami, but what you're asking Jay Ajayi to do now is not be the number one guy. You're asking him to kind of fit in, and I thought he was productive at Philadelphia. So I absolutely believe that he's worth bringing in. Now, look, he's out there for a reason. He's available for a reason. They are there for reasons. But in terms of depth at running back, I think Ajayi makes a lot of sense. I also think that when it comes to running back, you can find guys in the summer that end up getting released by other teams. Once we get into training camp and we get cuts, you will have guys that are available. And at running back, more often than a lot of other positions, you can find guys, quote-unquote, off the scrap heap that come in and plug in and play right away. So I wouldn't be too terrified if I'm a Texans fan that I don't have enough depth at running back, because that is a position where you can find guys come training camp time that get released by other teams.
So looking elsewhere in the AFC South, how well do you think the Titans, Colts, and Jags all drafted and acted in free agency?
Relatively well. I mean, I think that the biggest move in this division was Nick Foles for the Jaguars.
Definitely.
What happened at Jacksonville last year was really unacceptable, and it really began with the quarterback. Now, at times I have defended Blake Bortles and saying that he's not the only problem with the Jaguars, and that if he's good enough to help get them to an AFC championship game, you can't completely blame him for the debacle that was last season. But just knowing that, I think it's such a young defense and it's such an emotional defense and an emotional team altogether, they'll really benefit from professionalism inside that locker room. And Foles brings that to the table. And obviously he's going to be teamed up again with a guy that he was coached by in Philadelphia in DeFilippo. So when you have that combination, I think the addition of Foles can help out the entire roster and the entire locker room. Out of all the draft picks, out of all the free agency that went through this entire division, Foles to Jacksonville, to me, is the biggest seismic impact signing or draft pick out of all four.
Yeah, the AFC South is looking particularly dangerous at the moment. I mean, it's hard to pick between these four teams because they've all got their strengths and weaknesses. But so it's a pretty even division in many regards. So who do you think the Texans' biggest competitors are for the division title entering 2019?
Close division, and I wouldn't be surprised if all four teams are separated by maybe three games total. I don't see any of these four teams being a 5-11 squad, and I don't see any of these four teams ended up being a 13-3 squad. I think the Jaguars are the biggest challenger to the Texans in this division. The Jags should have never been that bad last year, and did they overachieve the year before by getting all the way to the AFC title game? Perhaps, but there was a lot of reasons for that. I mean, the Jaguars' defense was really opportunistic. They could harass the opposing quarterback. They created a lot of turnovers, and they ran the football effectively with Leonard Fournette. It didn't take much for them to win games because they had a really good blueprint. Knowing that they're going to get at least reasonable quarterbacking from Nick Foles, they're really dangerous, and I think they should once again be in a playoff conversation. I think the Colts come back to the pack a little bit. I know the Colts had a great season last year, caught a lot of people by surprise, had a wonderful draft in 2018. They're not going to sneak up on anybody again this year, and I thought that in some ways they were prone coming into this offseason for a step back because they were so young last year that it wouldn't surprise me if they do a little bit of what happened with the Jaguars. Not as bad as the Jaguars, but I could see them closer to 500. The Titans, I don't think are going to be that great this season. I know Tennessee has tried to solve the quarterback position for a long time and thought Marcus Mariota was going to be that. But Mariota has kind of proven that you can't put a saddle on his back and expect to win big games and go to the playoffs regularly. So I think this year's division is going to come down to the Jaguars and the Texans.
I must admit, I'm very surprised to hear you say that the Colts might drop off this year. I know that a lot of people have been putting them up as possible favourites for the division, so it's going to be an interesting year, that's for sure. So if you had to call the winner for the division today, I know it's very early, obviously, Who do you think you would give that to?
I would give it to Jacksonville right now. I really do believe that Nick Foles will be an enormous kind of problem solver for a lot of that locker room. They needed somebody to establish what the baseline for winning was inside that locker room. They needed a true leader, and what they didn't need was an ego. And Nick Foles provides stability and leadership without an ego. And I think that's really important for that team to be able to go out there, know that they're going to get competent quarterbacking, but a guy that doesn't need to get to him, to the guys, the way. So I would put the Jaguars as my favorite right now. When I say that the Colts could have a drop off, I'm not talking about going 6-10.
No.
I think they might just be more along the lines of 9-7 or an 8-8 team. But I tend to think that when you have a young team like we saw last year kind of splash, then expectations become higher, and can they follow that up with the second season? And that was an enormous success because of the draft class, but I'm not certain that you can always count on the draft class to come through in year number two the same way they were in year number one when there were no expectations. So I think it's possible that all four teams are 8-8 or better. I could see, you know, a team at 8-8, 9-7, 10-6, and 11-5, but I think if I were to grade it out right now, I think the Jags right now are my slight favorite of the division.
Are you not concerned at all about the loss of Telvin Smith for the year? I mean, he was their leading tackler last season. Do you not think that's a big loss for them on defense?
I do. I think it's a significant loss. I just think, though, that that defense has a lot of other playmakers and that they have an ability as a bunch of guys that can definitely get after the quarterback, that can definitely be rangy and have a lot of athleticism to be able to cover up some of the holes that Telvin Smith leaves behind. No doubt that's a really big loss, but I do believe the Jaguars have built a defense that, you know, we didn't see how great it could be last year because emotionally they just weren't ready for that spot. But I think that 2 years ago you saw that they had playmakers at so many positions they really were able to kind of pick up for one another.
Certainly. So finally, just to round off here, I like to throw people off slightly with the last question and go slightly off topic. So which Texans player or coach would you most like to see in a Game of Thrones episode and in what sort of role?
Well, this is a great question for me because I'm not a huge Game of Thrones guy, but I do kind of understand overall what is going on. And so I would like to see Bill O'Brien in some type of death match, in some type of, you know, match to the death, because this is a guy that's always so intense. He's always got that game face on. He's always peering out from, you know, his play card, and he looks like he's always ready for a battle. And I could see him throwing on some armor or having a sword in his hand and really kind of like battling somebody. You know, perhaps the other sideline is Frank Reich. I could see those two in some type of battle to the death. I could see Doug Marrone jumping in there as well. You know, somebody has a malice. Somebody else has a double sword. I could even see a dragon running in. Maybe that's perhaps Tom Coughlin breathing fire. You know, but out of the Texans, give me Bill O'Brien in some type of duel to the death.
I definitely think that an AFC South spinoff is what Game of Thrones needs coming up soon. That sounds fantastic to me.
Yeah, with a Jacksonville Jaguars pool somewhere in the background.
Absolutely, that would be fantastic. Damon, thank you very much for joining me. It's been fantastic to speak to you. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
All the listeners can follow me on Twitter or check out my tweets. DA on CBS is the handle. That's DA on CBS. Or if they want to listen to the show, they can go to our website, CBSSportsRadio.com, or the CBS Sports app.
Thank you very much for joining me once again. It's been great to speak to you.
Pleasure. Anytime.
I've been your host for the day, Anthony Wood. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at ARWoodNFL. And of course, keep up to date with everything Texans at the Texans Wire of USA Today. Thank you very much for listening.